lips, but a soft and charming figure. And her skin was so delicate and pure that she was lovely even though her face was quite pale. The features of her face were short and broad, but the expansive, strong arc of her cheeks and chin gave it beauty. And her wide mouth had thin, rosy lips with small, even teeth that looked like a child's first teeth. When she raised her heavy eyelids, her clear, gray-green eyes were like shining stars beneath the long black eyelashes. Black hair, light-colored eyes. Kristen had always thought that was the most beautiful combination, ever since she had seen Erlan for the first time. Most of her own handsome sons had that coloring. Kristen showed Jofrid to a place on the women's bench next to her own. She sat there, graceful and shy, among all the servants she didn't know, eating little and blushing every time Gauta drank a toast to her during the meal. He was bursting with pride and restless elation as he sat in the high seat. To honor her son's return home, Kristen had spread a cloth over the table that evening and set two wax tapers in the candlesticks made of gilded copper. Gauta and Sir Sigurd were constantly toasting each other, and the old gentleman grew more and more maudlin, putting his arm around Gauta's shoulder and promising to speak on his behalf to his wealthy kinsmen. Yes, even to King Magnus himself. Surely he would be able to obtain for him reconciliation with the maiden's offended kin. Sigurd Eljarn himself had not a single foe. It was his father's rancorous temperament and his own misfortune with his wife that had made him so alone. In the end, Gauta sprang to his feet with a drinking horn in his hand. How handsome he is, thought Kristen, and how like father. Her father had been the same way when he was beginning to feel drunk, so radiant with joy, straight-backed and lively. Things are now such between this woman, Jofrid Helga's daughter, and myself, that today we celebrate our homecoming, and later we will celebrate our wedding, if God grants us such happiness. You, Sigurd, we thank you for your steadfast kinship, and you, mother, for welcoming us as I expected you would, with your loyal motherly warmth. As we brothers have often discussed, you seem to us the most magnanimous of women and the most loving mother. Therefore I ask you to honor us by preparing our bridal bed in such a fine and beautiful manner that without shame I can invite Jofrid to sleep there beside me. And I ask you to accompany Jofrid up to the loft yourself, so that she might retire with as much seemliness as possible, since she has neither a mother still alive nor any kinswomen here. Sir Sigurd was now quite drunk, and he burst out laughing. You slept together in my loft. If I didn't know better, I thought the two of you had already shared a bed before. Gauta shook his golden hair impatiently. Yes, kinsman. But this is the first night Jofrid will sleep in my arms on her own manor, God willing. But I beg you good people to drink and be merry tonight. Now you have seen the woman who will be my wife here at Durengard. This woman and no other. I swear this before God, our Lord, and on my Christian faith. I expect all of you to respect her, both servants and maids. And I expect you, my men, to help me keep and protect her in a seemly manner, my boys. During all the shouting and commotion that accompanied Gauta's speech, Kristen quietly left the table and whispered to Ingrid to follow her up to the loft. Lavrans Björgulfsson's magnificent loft room had fallen into disrepair over the years, after the sons of Erland had moved in. Kristen hadn't wanted to give the reckless boys any but the coarsest and most essential of bedclothes and pieces of furniture, and she seldom had the room cleaned, for it wasn't worth the effort. Gauta and his friends tracked in filth and manure as quickly as she swept it out. There was an ingrained smell from men coming in and flinging themselves onto the beds, soaked and sweaty and muddy from the woods and the farmyard, a smell of the stables and leather garments and wet dogs. Now Kristen and her maid quickly swept and cleaned as best they could. The mistress brought in fine bed coverlets, blankets and cushions, and burned some juniper. On a little table which she moved close to the bed, she placed a silver goblet filled with the last of the wine in the house, a loaf of wheat bread, and a candle in an iron holder. This was as elegant as she could make things on such short notice. Weapons hung on the timbered wall next to the alcove, Erlan's heavy two-handed sword and the smaller sword he used to carry, along with felling axes and broad axes. Björgulf's and Nokva's axes still hung there too, and the two small axes that the boys seldom used because they considered them too lightweight. But these were the tools that her father had used to carve and shape all manner of objects with such skill and care that afterward he only had to do the fine polishing with his gouge and knife. Kristin carried the axes into the alcove and put them inside Erlan's chest, where his bloody shirt lay, along with the axe he was holding in his hand when he received the mortal wound. Laughing, Gauta invited Lavrans to light the way up to the loft for his bride. The boy was both embarrassed and proud. Kristin saw that Lavrans understood his brother's unlawful wedding was a dangerous game, but he was high-spirited and giddy from these strange events. With sparkling eyes, he gazed at Gauta and his beautiful betrothed. On the stairs up to the loft, the candle went out. Jofrid said to Kristin,
"Gauta should not have asked you to do this, even though he was drunk. Don't come any farther with me, mistress. Have no fear that I might forget I'm a fallen woman, cut off from the council of my kin."
"I'm not too good to serve you," said Kristin. "Not until my son has atoned for his sin against you, and you can rightly call me mother-in-law. Sit down and I'll comb your hair.
Your hair is beautiful beyond compare, child."
But after the servants were asleep and Kristin was lying in bed, she once again felt a certain uneasiness. Without thinking, she had told this Jofrid more than she meant to, yet. But she was so young, and she showed so clearly that she didn't expect to be regarded as any better than what she was, a child who had fled from honor and obedience. So that's the way it looked when people let the bridal procession and homeward journey come before the wedding. Kristin sighed. Once she too had been willing to risk the same for Erlan, but she didn't know whether she would have dared if his mother had been living at Husaby. No, no. She wouldn't make things any worse for the child upstairs. Sir Sigurd was still staggering around the room. He was to sleep with Lavrans. In a mawkish way, but with sincere intentions, he talked about the two young people. He would spare nothing to help them find a good outcome to this reckless venture. The next day, Jofrid showed Gauta's mother what she had brought along to the manor. Two leather sacks with clothes and a little chest made of walrus tusk in which she kept her jewelry. As if she had read Kristin's thoughts, Jofrid said that these possessions belonged to her. They had been given to her for her own use, as gifts as inherited items, mostly from her mother. She had taken nothing from her father. Full of sorrow, Kristin sat leaning her cheek on her hand. On that night, an eternity ago, when she had collected her gold in a chest to steal away from home, most of what she had put inside were gifts from the parents she had secretly shamed and whom she was openly going to offend and distress. But if these were Jofrid's own possessions and if her mother's inheritance was only jewelry, then she must come from an exceedingly wealthy home. Kristin estimated that the goods she saw before her were worth more than 30 marks in silver. The scarlet gown alone, with its white fur and silver clasps, and the silk-lined hood that went with it, must have cost 10 or 12 marks. It was all well and good if the maiden's father would agree to reconcile with Gauta, but her son could never be considered an equal match for this woman. And if Helga brought such harsh charges against Gauta, as he had the right and ability to do, things looked quite bleak indeed.
"My mother always wore this ring," said Jofrid. "If you will accept it, mistress, then I'll know that you don't judge me as sternly as a good and high-born woman might be expected to do."
"Oh, but then I might be tempted to take the place of your mother," said Kristin with a smile, putting the ring on her finger. It was a little silver ring set with a lovely white agate, and Kristin thought the child must consider it especially precious because it reminded her of her mother.
"I expect I must give you a gift in return."
She brought over her chest and took out the gold ring with sapphires. "Gauta's father put this ring in my bed after I brought his son into the world." Jofrid accepted the ring by kissing Kristin's hand.
"Otherwise I had thought of asking you for another gift," Mother? She smiled so charmingly. Don't be afraid that Gauta has brought home a lazy or incapable woman. But I own no proper work dress. Give me an old gown of yours, and allow me to lend you a hand. Perhaps then you will soon grow to like me better than it is reasonable for me to expect right now. And then Kristen had to show the young maiden everything she had in her chests, and Jofrid praised all of Kristen's lovely handiwork with such rapt attention that the older woman ended up giving her one thing after another. Two linen sheets with silk-knotted embroidery, a blue-trimmed towel, a coverlet woven in four panels, and finally the long tapestry with a falcon hunt woven into it. I don't want these things to leave this manor, but with the help of God and the Virgin Mary, this house will someday be yours. Then they both went over to the storehouses and stayed there for many hours, enjoying each other's company. Kristen wanted to give Jofrid her green homespun gown with the black tufts woven into the fabric, but Jofrid thought it much too fine for a work dress. Poor thing. She was just trying to flatter her husband's mother, thought Kristen, hiding a smile. At last they found an old brown dress Jofrid thought would be suitable if she cut it shorter and sewed patches under the arms and on the elbows. She asked to borrow a scissors and sewing things at once, and then she sat down to sew. Kristen took up some mending as well, and the two women were still sitting there together when Gauta and Sir Sigurd came in for the evening meal. Chapter 3 Kristen had to admit with all her heart that Jofrid was a woman who knew how to use her hands. If things went well, then Gauta was certainly fortunate. He would have a wife who was as hard-working and diligent as she was rich and beautiful. Kristen herself could not have found a more capable woman to succeed her at Urengard, not if she had searched through all of Norway. One day, she said, and afterward she wasn't sure what had happened to make the words spill from her lips, that on the day Jofrid Helga's daughter became Gauta's lawful wife, she would give her keys to the young woman and move out to the old house with Lavrans. Afterward, she thought she should have considered these words more carefully before she uttered them. There were already many instances when she had spoken of something too soon when she was talking with Jofrid. But there was the fact that Jofrid was not well. Kristen had noticed it almost at once after the young girl arrived. And Kristen remembered the first winter she had spent at Husaby. She, at least, had been married, and her husband and father were bound by kinship, no matter what might happen to their friendship after the sin came to light. All the same, she had suffered so terribly from remorse and shame, and her heart had felt bitter toward Erlon. But she was already 19 winters old back then, while Jofrid was barely 17. And here she was now, abducted and without rights, far from her home and among strangers, carrying Gauta's child under her heart. Kristen could not deny that Jofrid seemed to be stronger and braver than she herself had been. But Jofrid hadn't breached the sanctity of the convent. She hadn't broken promises and betrothal vows. She hadn't betrayed her parents or lied to them or stolen their honor behind their backs. Even though these two young people had dared sin against the laws, constraints, and moral customs of the land, they needn't have such an anguished conscience. Kristen prayed fervently for a good outcome to Gauta's foolhardy deed, and she consoled herself that God, in his fairness, couldn't possibly deal Gauta and Jofrid any harsher circumstances than she and Erlund had been given. And they had been married. Their child of sin had been born to share in a lawful inheritance from all his kinsmen. Since neither Gauta nor Jofrid spoke of the matter, Kristen didn't want to mention it either, although she longed to have a talk with the inexperienced young woman. Jofrid should spare herself and enjoy her morning rest instead of getting up before everyone else on the manor. Kristen saw that it was Jofrid's desire to rise before her mother-in-law and to accomplish more than she did. But Jofrid was not the kind of person Kristen could offer either help or solicitude. The only thing she could do was silently take the heaviest work away from her and treat her as if she were the rightful young mistress on the estate, both when they were alone and in front of the servants.
Frida was furious at having to relinquish her place next to her mistress and give it to Gauta's. She used an odious word to describe Jofrid one day when she and Kristen were together in the cookhouse. For once, Kristen struck her maid. How splendid to hear such words from you, an old nag lusting after men as you do. Frida wiped the blood from her nose and mouth. Aren't you supposed to be better than a poor man's offspring, daughters of great chieftains such as yourself and this Jofrid? You know with certainty that a bridal bed with silken sheets awaits you. You're the ones who must be shameless and lusting after men if you can't wait but have to run off into the woods with young lads and end up with wayside bastards. For shame, I say to you. Hold your tongue now. Go out and wash yourself. You're standing there bleeding into the dough, said her mistress quite calmly. Frida met Jofrid in the doorway. Kristen saw from the young woman's face that she must have heard the conversation with the maid.
The poor thing's chatter is as foolish as she is. I can't send her away. She has no place to go.
Jofrid smiled scornfully. Then Kristen said, She was the foster mother for two of my sons.
But she wasn't Gauta's foster mother, replied Jofrid. She reminds us both of that fact as often as she can. Can't you marry her off?
She asked sharply. Kristen had to laugh. Don't you think I've tried? But all it took was for the man to have a few words with his future bride. Kristen thought she should seize the opportunity to talk with Jofrid, to let her know that here she would meet with only maternal goodwill. But Jofrid looked angry and defiant. In the meantime, it was now clearly evident that Jofrid was not walking alone. One day she was going to clean some feathers for new mattresses. Kristen advised her to tie back her hair so it wouldn't be covered with down. Jofrid bound a linen cloth around her head.
No doubt this is now more fitting than going bareheaded, she said with a little laugh.
That may well be, said Kristen curtly. And yet she wasn't pleased that Jofrid should jest about such a thing. A few days later, Kristen came out of the cookhouse and saw Jofrid cutting open several black grouse. There was blood spattered all over her arms. Horror-stricken, Kristen pushed her aside.
Child, you mustn't do this bloody work now. Don't you know better than that? Oh, surely you don't believe everything women say is true, said Jofrid skeptically.
Then Kristen told her about the marks of fire that Nokva had received on his chest. She purposely spoke of it in such a way that Jofrid would understand she was not yet married when she looked at the burning church.
I suppose you hadn't thought such a thing of me, she said quietly. Oh, yes, Gauta has already told me. Your father had promised you to Simon Andersen, but you ran off with Erland Nikolausen to his aunt, and then Lavrans had to give his consent.
It wasn't exactly like that. We didn't run off. Simon released me as soon as he realized that I was more fond of Erland than of him, and then my father gave his consent. Unwillingly, but he placed my hand in Erland's. I was betrothed for a year. Does that seem worse to you? Asked Kristen, for Jofrid had turned bright red and gave her a look of horror. The girl used her knife to scrape off the blood from her white arms.
Yes, she said in a low but firm voice. I would not have squandered my good reputation and honor needlessly. But I won't say anything of this to Gauta, she said quickly. He thinks his father carried you off by force because he could not win you with entreaty.
No doubt what she said was true, thought Kristen. As time passed and Kristen continued to ponder the matter, it seemed to her that the most honorable thing to do was for Gauta to send word to Helga of Hovland to place his case in his hands and ask to be given Jofrid as his wife on such terms as her father decided to grant them. But whenever she spoke of this to Gauta, he would look dismayed and refuse to answer. Finally, he asked his mother crossly whether she could get a letter over the mountains in the winter time. No, she told him, but Sir a Dog could surely send a letter to Ness and then onward along the coast. The priests always managed to get their letters through, even during the winter. Gauta said it would be too costly. Then it will not be with your wife that you have a child this spring, said his mother indignantly. Even so, the matter cannot be arranged so quickly, said Gauta. Kristen could see that he was quite angry. A terrible, dark fear seized hold of her as time went on. She couldn't help noticing that Gauta's first ardent joy over Jofrid had vanished completely. He went about looking sullen and ill-tempered. From the very start, this matter of Gauta abducting his bride had seemed as bad as it could be, but his mother thought it would be much worse if afterward the man turned cowardly. If the two young people regretted their sin, that was all well and good. But she had an ugly suspicion that there was more of an unmanly fear in Gauta toward the man he had offended than any God-fearing remorse. Gauta. All her days she had thought the most highly of this son of hers. It couldn't be true what people said. That he was unreliable and dealt carelessly with women. That he was already tired of Jofrid, now that his bride had faded and grown heavy, and the day was approaching when he would have to answer for his actions to her kinsmen. She sought excuses for her son. If Jofrid had allowed herself to be seduced so easily, she who had never witnessed anything during her upbringing other than the seemly behavior of pious people, Kristen's sons had known from childhood that their own mother had sinned, that their father had conceived children with another man's wife during his youth, and that he had sinned with a married woman when they were nearly grown boys. Ulf Haldorsson, their foster father, and Frida's frivolous chatter. Oh, it wasn't so strange that these young men should be weak in that way. Gauta would have to marry Jofrid, if he could win the consent of her kinsmen, and be grateful for it. But it would be a shame for Jofrid if she should now see that Gauta married her reluctantly and without desire. One day during Lent, Kristen and Jofrid were preparing sacks of provisions for the woodcutters. They pounded dried fish thin and flat, pressed butter into containers, and filled wooden casks with ale and milk. Kristen saw that Jofrid now found it terribly difficult to stand or walk for very long, but she merely grew annoyed if Kristen told her to sit down and rest. To appease her a little, Kristen happened to mention the story about the stallion that Gauta had supposedly tamed with a maiden's hair ribbon. Surely it must have been yours. No, said Jofrid crossly, turning crimson. But then she added, the ribbon belonged to Asa, my sister. She laughed and said, Gauta courted her first, but when I came home, he couldn't decide which of us he liked best. But Asa was the one he had expected to find visiting Dagrun last summer when he went to Son. And he was angry when I teased him about her. He swore by God and man that he was not the sort to come too close to the daughters of worthy men. He said there had been nothing between him and Asa that would prevent him from sleeping without sin in my arms that night. I took him at his word. She laughed again. When she saw Kristen's expression, she nodded stubbornly. Yes, I want Gauta to be my husband, and he will be. You can count on that, Mother. I most often get what I want. Kristen woke up to pitch darkness. The cold bit at her cheeks and chin. When she pulled the blanket more snugly around her, she noticed there was frost on it from her breath. It had to be nearly morning, but she dreaded getting up and seeing the stars. She curled up under the covers to warm herself a little more. At that moment, she remembered her dream. She seemed to be lying in bed in the little house at Husaby, and she had just given birth to a child. She was holding him in her arms, wrapped in a lambskin, which had rolled up and fallen away from the infant's little dark red body. He was holding his tiny clenched hands over his face, with his knees tucked up to his belly and his feet crossed. Now and then he would stir a bit. It didn't occur to her to wonder why the boy wasn't swaddled properly, and why there were no other women with them in the room. Her heat was still enveloping the child as he lay close to her. Through her arms she could feel a tug at the roots of her heart every time he stirred. Weariness and pain were still shrouding her like a darkness that was starting to fade as she lay there and gazed at her son, feeling her joy and love for him ceaselessly growing, the way the rim of daylight grows brighter along the mountain crest. But at the same time as she lay there in bed, she was also standing outside the house. Below her stretched the countryside, lit by the morning sun. It was an early spring day. She drank in the sharp, fresh air. The wind was icy cold, but it tasted of the faraway sea and of thawing snow. The ridges were bathed with morning sunlight on the opposite side of the valley, with snowless patches around the farms. Pale, crusted snow shone like silver in all the clearings amid the dark green forests. The sky was swept clean, a bright yellow and pale blue, with only a few dark, wind-blown clusters of clouds hovering high above. But it was cold. Where she was standing, the snowdrift was still frozen hard after the night frost, and between the buildings lay cold shadows, for the sun was directly above the eastern ridge behind the manor. And right in front of her, where the shadows ended, the morning wind was rippling through the pale year-old grass. It moved and shimmered, with clumps of ice shiny as steel still among the roots. Oh. Oh. Against her will, a sigh of lament rose up from her breast. She still had Lavrans. She could hear the boys even breathing from the other bed. And Gauta. He was asleep up in the loft with his paramour. Kristen sighed again, moved restlessly, and Erlan's old dog settled against her legs, which were tucked up underneath the bedclothes. Now she could hear that Jofrid was up and walking across the floor. Kristen quickly got out of bed and stuck her feet into her fur-lined boots, putting on her homespun dress and fur jacket. In the dark, she fumbled her way over to the hearth, crouched down to stir the ashes and blow on them. But there was not the slightest spark. The fire had died out in the night. She pulled her flint out of the pouch on her belt, but the tinder must have gotten wet and then froze. Finally, she gave up trying, picked up the ember pan, and went upstairs to borrow some coals from Jofrid. A good fire was burning in the little fireplace, lighting up the room. In the glow of the flames, Jofrid sat stitching the copper clasp more securely to Gauta's reindeer coat. Over in the dim light of the bed, Kristen caught a glimpse of the man's naked torso. Gauta slept without covers even in the most biting cold. He was sitting up and having something to eat in bed. Jofrid got to her feet heavily, with a proprietary air. Wouldn't mother like a drop of ale? She had heated up the morning drink for Gauta. And mother should take along this pitcher for Lavrans. He was going out with Gauta to cut wood that day. It would be cold for the men. Kristen involuntarily grimaced when she was back downstairs and lit the fire. Seeing Jofrid busy with domestic chores and Gauta sitting there, openly allowing his wife to serve him. And his paramour's concern for her unlawful husband. All this seemed to Kristen so loathsome and immodest. Lavrans stayed out in the forest, but Gauta came home that night, worn out and hungry. The women sat at the table after the servants had left, keeping the master company while he drank. Kristen saw that Jofrid was not feeling well that evening. She kept letting her sewing sink to her lap as spasms of pain flickered across her face. "Are you in pain, Jofrid?" asked Kristen softly.
"Yes, a little. In my feet and legs," replied the girl.
She had toiled all day long as usual, refusing to spare herself. Now pain had overtaken her, and her legs had swollen up. Suddenly little tears spilled out from her lowered eyes. Kristen had never seen a woman cry in such a strange fashion. Without a sound, her teeth clenched tight, she sat there weeping clear, round tears. Kristen thought they looked as hard as pearls, trickling down the haggard, brown-flecked face. Jofrid looked angry that she was forced to surrender. Reluctantly, she allowed Kristen to help her over to the bed. Gauta followed.
"Are you in pain, my Jofrid?" he asked awkwardly.
His face was fiery red from the cold, and he looked genuinely unhappy as he watched his mother helping Jofrid get settled, taking off her shoes and socks and tending to her swollen feet and legs.
"Are you in pain, my Jofrid?" he kept asking.
Yes, said Jofrid in a low voice, biting back her rage. Do you think I'd behave this way if I wasn't?
Are you in pain, my Jofrid? He repeated.
Surely you can see for yourself. Don't stand there moping like a foolish boy.
Kristen turned to face her son, her eyes blazing. The dull knot of fear about how things would turn out, of impatience because she had to tolerate the disorderly life of these two on her estate, of gnawing doubt about her son's manliness, all these things erupted in a ferocious rage.
Are you such a simpleton that you think she might be feeling good? She can see that you're not man enough to venture over the mountains because it's windy and snowing. You know full well that soon she'll have to crawl on her knees, this poor woman, and writhe in the greatest of torments. And her child will be called a bastard because you don't dare go to her father. You sit here in the house warming the bench, not daring to lift a finger to protect the wife you have or your child soon to be born. Your father was not so afraid of my father that he didn't dare seek him out, or so faint-hearted that he refused to ski through the mountains in the winter time. Shame on you, Gauta, and pity me who must live to see the day when I call my son a timid man, one of the sons that Erland gave me.
Gauta picked up the heavy carved chair with both hands and slammed it against the floor. He ran over to the table and swept everything off. Then he rushed to the door, giving one last kick to the chair. They heard him cursing as he climbed the stairs to the loft.
Oh no, mother. You were much too hard on Gauta.
Jofrid propped herself up on her elbow.
You can't reasonably expect him to risk his life going into the mountains in the winter in order to seek out my father and find out whether he'll be allowed to marry his seduced bride with no dowry other than the shift I wore when he took me away, or else be driven from the land as an outlaw.
Waves of anger were still washing through Kristen's heart. She replied proudly,
And yet I don't believe my son would think that way. No, said Jofrid, if he didn't have me to think for him.
When she saw Kristen's expression, laughter crept into her voice.
Dear mother, I've had trouble enough trying to restrain Gauta. I refuse to let him commit any more follies for my sake and cause our children to lose the riches that I can expect to inherit from my kinsmen if Gauta can come to an agreement that will be the best and most honorable one for all of us.
What do you mean by that? Asked Kristen.
I mean that when my kinsmen seek out Gauta, Sir Sigurd will meet them, so they will see that Gauta is not without kin. He will have to bear paying full restitution, but then father will allow him to marry me, and I will regain my right to an inheritance along with my sisters.
So you are partially to blame, said Kristen, for the child coming into the world before you are married?
If I could run away with Gauta, then... Surely no one would believe that he has placed a sword blade in bed between us all these nights.
Didn't he ever seek out your kinsmen to ask for your hand in marriage? Asked Kristen.
No, we knew it would have been futile, even if Gauta had been a much richer man than he is.
Jofrid burst out laughing again.
Don't you see, mother? Father thinks he knows better than any man how to trade horses. But a person would have to be more alert than my father if he wanted to fool Gauta Erlandsson in an exchange of horses.
Kristen couldn't help smiling, in spite of her ill temper. I don't know the law very well in such cases, she said somberly, but I'm not certain, Jofrid, that it will be easy for Gauta to obtain what you would consider a good reconciliation. If Gauta is sentenced as an outlaw, and your father takes you back home and lets you suffer his wrath, or if he demands that you enter a convent to atone for your sins,
he can't send me to a convent without sending splendid gifts along with me. And it will be less costly and more honorable if he reconciles with Gauta and demands restitution. You see? Then he won't have to give up any cattle when he marries me off. And because of his dislike for Olav, my sister's husband, I think I will share in the inheritance with my sisters. If not, then my kinsmen will have to see to this child's welfare too. And I know father would think twice before he tried to take me back home to Hovland with a bastard child, to let me suffer his wrath, knowing me as he does. I don't know much about the law either, but I know father and I know Gauta.
and now enough time has already passed that this proposal cannot be presented until I myself am delivered and healthy again. Then, Mother, you will not see me weeping. Oh, no, I have no doubt that Gauta will have his reconciliation on such terms as... No, Mother, Gauta, who is a descendant of high-born men and kings, and you, who come from the best of lineages in Norway. If you have had to endure seeing your son sink below the rank that was their birthright, then you will see prosperity regained for your descendants in the children that Gauta and I shall have. Kristen sat in silence. It was indeed conceivable that things might happen as Jofrid wished. She realized that she hadn't needed to worry so much on her behalf. The girl's face was now quite gaunt. The rounded softness of her cheeks had wasted away, and it was easier to see what a large, strong jaw she had. Jofrid yawned, pushed herself up into a sitting position, and looked around for her shoes. Kristen helped her to put them on. Jofrid thanked her and said, "Don't trouble Gauta any more, Mother. He finds it hard to bear that we won't be married beforehand, but I refuse to make my child poor even before he's born." 2 weeks later, Jofrid gave birth to a big, fair son, and Gauta sent word to Sundbu the very same day. Sir Sigurd came at once to Jurengard, and he held Erlan Gautason when the boy was baptized. But as happy as Kristen Lavrun's daughter was with her grandson, it still angered her that Erlan's name should be given, for the first time, to a paramour's child. "Your father risked more to give his son his birthright," she told Gauta one evening as he sat in the weaving room and watched her get the boy ready for the night. Jofrid was already sleeping sweetly in her bed. His love for old Sir Nikolaus was somewhat strained, but even so, he would never have shown his father such disrespect as to name his son after him if he were not lawfully born. "And Orm, he was named for his maternal grandfather, wasn't he?" said Gauta. "Yes, I know, Mother. Those may not be the words most becoming a good son. But you should realize that my brothers and I all noticed that while our father was alive, you didn't think he was the proper example for us in many matters. And yet now you talk about him constantly, as if he had been a holy man or close to it. You should know that we realize he wasn't. All of us would be proud if we ever attained father's stature, or even reached to his shoulders. We remember that he was noble and courageous, foremost among men in terms of those qualities that suit a man best. But you can't make us believe he was the most submissive or seemly of men in a woman's chamber, or the most capable of farmers. And yet no one need wish anything better for you, my Erlan, than that you should take after him." He picked up his child, now properly swaddled, and touched his chin to the tiny red face framed by the light-colored wool cloth. "This gifted and promising boy, Erlan Gautason of Jurengard. You should tell your grandmother that you aren't afraid your father will fail you." He made the sign of the cross over the child and put him back in Kristen's arms, then went over to the bed and looked down at the slumbering young mother. "My Jofrid is as well as she can be, you say? She looks pale, but I suppose you must know best. Sleep well in here, and may God's peace be with you." 1 month after the birth of the boy, Gauta held a splendid christening feast, and his kinsmen came from far away to attend the celebration. Kristen assumed that Gauta had asked them to come in order to counsel him on his position. It was now spring, and he could soon expect to hear news from Jofrid's kin. Kristen had the joy of seeing Ivar and Skula come home together. And her cousins came to Jurengard too, Sigurd Schierning, who was married to her uncle's daughter from Skog, Ivar Yesling of Ringheim, and Havard Tronson. She hadn't seen the Tronson since Erland had brought misfortune down upon the men of Sundbu. Now they were older. They had always been carefree and reckless, but intrepid and magnanimous, and they hadn't changed much at all. They greeted the sons of Erland and Sir Sigurd, who was their cousin and successor at Sundbu, with a free and open manner befitting kinsmen. The ale and mead flowed in rivers in honor of little Erland. Gauta and Jofrid welcomed their guests
as unrestrainedly as if they had been wed and the king himself had married them. Everyone was joyous, and no one seemed to consider that the honor of these two young people was still at stake. But Kristin learned that Jofrid had not forgotten.
The more bold and swaggering they are when they meet my father, the more easily he will comply, she said. And Olaf Pieper would never hide the fact that he would be pleased to sit on the same bench as men from the ancient lineages.
The only one who did not seem to feel quite comfortable in this gathering of kin was Sir Jamalt Havertsen. King Magnus had made him a knight at Christmas. Ramborg Lavran's daughter was now the wife of a knight. This time Sir Jamalt had brought his eldest son, Andres Simonsen, along with him. Kristin had asked him to do so the last time Jamalt came north, for she had heard a rumor that there was supposedly something strange about the boy. Then she grew terribly frightened. She wondered whether some harm might have been done to his soul or body because of what she had done in his behalf when he was a child. But his stepfather said no. The boy was healthy and strong, as good as gold, and perhaps cleverer than most people. But it was true that he had second sight. Sometimes he seemed to drift away, and when he came back, he would often do peculiar things, such as the year before. One day he took his silver spoon, the one Kristin had given to him at his birth, and a torn shirt that had belonged to his father, and he left the manor and went down to a bridge that stretches across the river along the main road near Ahlin. There he sat for many hours, waiting. Eventually three poor people came walking across the bridge, an old beggar and a young woman holding an infant. Andres went over and gave the things to them, and then asked if he might carry the child for the woman. Back home, everyone was desperate with anguish when Andres didn't appear for meals or by nightfall. They went out looking for him, and at last Jamalt heard that Andres had been seen far north in the next parish, in the company of a couple known as Krep and Kroka. He was carrying their infant. When Jamalt finally found the boy on the following day, Andres explained that he had heard a voice during Mass on the previous Sunday while he was looking at the images painted on the front of the altar. It showed the Mother of God and Saint Joseph leaving the land of Egypt and carrying a child, and he wished that he had lived back then, for he would have asked to accompany them and carry the child for the Virgin Mary. Then he heard a voice, the gentlest and sweetest voice in the world, and it promised to show him a sign if he would go out to Bierkheim Bridge on a certain day. Otherwise, Andres was reluctant to speak of his visions, because their parish priest had said they were partly imagined and partly due to a confused and muddled state of mind, and he frightened his mother out of her wits with his strange ways. But he talked to an old servant woman, an exceedingly pious woman, and to a friar who used to wander through the countryside during Lent and Advent. The boy would doubtless choose the spiritual life, so Simon Simonsen was sure to be the one who would settle at Forma when the time came. He was a healthy and lively child who looked a great deal like his father, and he was Romborg's favorite. Ramborg and Jamalt had not yet had a child of their own. Kristin had heard from those who had seen Ramborg at Ramarike that she had grown quite fat and lazy. She kept company with the wealthiest and mightiest people in the south, but she never wanted to make the trip to her home valley, and Kristin hadn't seen her only sister since they parted on that day at Formo. But Kristin was convinced that Ramborg's resentment toward her remained unchanged. She got on well with Jamalt, and he tended to the well-being of his stepchildren with loving care. If he should die with no children of his own, he had arranged for the eldest son of the man who would inherit most of his property to marry Ulvild Simon's daughter. In that way at least the daughter of Simon Dara would have some benefit from his inheritance. Arnjord had married Grunda of Eiken the year after her father's death. Gir Dara and Jamalt had provided her with a rich dowry, as they knew Simon would have wanted. And Jamalt said she was well. Grunda appeared to let his wife guide him in all manner of things, and they already had three handsome children. Kristin was strangely moved when she saw Simon and Romborg's oldest son again. He was the living image of Lavrans Björgolfsson, even more than Gaute. And over the past few years, Kristin had given up her belief that Gaute might be anything like her father in temperament. Andrés Dára was now 12 years old, tall and slender, fair and lovely and rather quiet, although he seemed robust and cheerful enough, with good physical abilities and a hearty appetite, except that he refused to eat meat. There was something that set him apart from other boys, but Kristin couldn't say what it was, although she watched him closely. Andrés became good friends with his aunt, but he never mentioned his visions, and he didn't have any of his spells while in Seal. The four sons of Erland seemed to enjoy being together on their mother's estate, but Kristin didn't manage to talk much with her sons. When they were discussing things among themselves, she felt as if their lives and well-being had now slipped beyond her view. The two who came from far away had left their childhood home behind, and the two who lived on the manor were on the verge of taking its management out of her hands. The gathering took place in the midst of the springtime shortages, and she saw that Gaute must have been making preparations for it by rationing the fodder more strictly than usual that winter. He had also borrowed fodder from Sir Sigurd. But he had done all these things without consulting her. And all the advice regarding Gauta's case was also presented without including her, even though she sat in the same room with the men. For this reason, she was not surprised when Ivar came to her one day and said that Lavrans would be leaving with him when he went back to Ranheim. Ivar Erlandsson also told his mother on another day that he thought she should move to Ranheim with him after Gauta was married. "Sina is a more amenable daughter-in-law to live with, I think. And it can't possibly be easy for you to give up your charge of the household when you are used to running everything." But otherwise he seemed to be fond of Jofrid, he and all the other men. Only Sir Jamalt seemed to regard her with some coolness. Kristin sat with her little grandson on her lap, thinking that it wouldn't be easy no matter where she was. It was difficult getting old. It seemed such a short time ago that she herself was the young woman, when it was her fate that prompted the clamor of the men's council and strife. Now she had been pushed into the background. Not long after her own sons had been just like this little boy, she recalled her dream about the newborn child. During this time, the thought of her own mother often came to her. She couldn't remember her mother except as an aging and melancholy woman. But she too had once been young. When she lay and warmed herself with the heat of her own body, her mother's body and soul had also been marked in her youth by caring and giving birth to her children. And doubtless she hadn't given it any more thought than Kristin had when she sat with the sweet young life at her breast, that as long as they both should live, each day would take the child farther and farther away from her arms. "After you had a child yourself, Kristin, I thought you would understand," her mother had once said. Now she realized that her mother's heart had been deeply etched with memories of her daughter, memories of her thoughts about the child from before she was born and from all the years the child could not remember, memories of fears and hopes and dreams that children would never know had been dreamed on their behalf before it was their own turn to fear and hope and dream in secret. Finally, the gathering of kinsmen split up, and some went to stay with Jamalt at Formo, while others accompanied Sigurd over to Vaga. Then one day, two of Gauta's leaseholders from the south of the valley came racing into the courtyard. The sheriff was on his way north to seek out Gauta at home, and the maiden's father and kinsmen were with him. Young Lavrans ran straight to the stable. The next evening it looked as if an army had gathered at Urengard. All of Gauta's kinsmen were there along with their armed men, and his friends from the countryside had come as well. Then Helga of Hovland arrived in a great procession to demand his rights from the man who had abducted his daughter. Kristin caught a glimpse of Helga Duke as he rode into the courtyard alongside Sir Paul Sorkvinson, the sheriff himself. Jofrid's father was an older, tall, and stoop-backed man who looked quite ill. It was evident that he limped when he got off his horse. Her sister's husband, Olav Pieper, was short, wide, and thick-set, Both his face and hair were red. Gauta stepped forward to meet them, his posture erect and dignified, and behind him he had an entire phalanx of kinsmen and friends. They stood in a semicircle in front of the stairs to the high loft. In the middle were the two older gentlemen holding the rank of knight, Sir Sigurd and Sir Jamalt. Kristen and Jofrid watched the meeting from the entryway to the weaving room, but they couldn't hear what was said. The men went up to the loft, and the two women retreated inside the weaving room. Neither of them felt like talking. Kristen sat down near the hearth. Jofrid paced the floor, holding her child in her arms. They continued in this way for a while. Then Jofrid wrapped a blanket around the boy and left the room with him. An hour later, Jamalt Halvardsson came in to find his wife's sister sitting alone, and he told her what had happened. Gauta had offered Helga Duke 16 marks in gold for Jofrid's honor and for taking her by force. This was the same amount that Helga's brother had been given in restitution for the life of his son. Gauta would then wed Jofrid with her father's consent and provide all the proper betrothal and wedding gifts, but in return Helga would have to accept Gauta and Jofrid with full reconciliation so that she would be given the same dowry as her sisters and share with them in the inheritance. Sir Sigurd, on behalf of Gauta's kinsmen, offered a guarantee that he would keep to this agreement. Helga Duke seemed willing to accept this offer at once, but his sons-in-law, Olaf Pieper and Nerid Karason, who was betrothed to Asa, voiced objections. They said Gauta must be the most arrogant of men if he dared to think he could set his own terms for his marriage to a maiden he had shamed while she was at her brother-in-law's manor and had then been taken by force, or to demand that she be allowed to share the inheritance with her sisters. It was easy to see, said Jamalt, that Gauta was not pleased he would have to haggle over the price for marrying a high-born maiden whom he had seduced and who had now given birth to his son. But it was also easy to see that he had learned his lessons and prayers by heart, so he didn't have to read them out of a book. In the midst of the discussion, as friends on both sides attempted to mediate, Jofrid came into the room with the child in her arms. Then her father broke down and could no longer hold back his tears, and so the matter was decided as she wished. It was clear that Gauta could never have paid such a fine, but Jofrid's dowry was set at the same amount, so things came out even. The result of the meeting was that Gauta won Jofrid, but received little more than what she had brought in her sacks when she arrived at Jurengard. But he gave her documents for almost all that he owned as betrothal and wedding gifts, and his brothers gave their assent. One day he would acquire great riches from her, provided their marriage was not childless, said Ivar Yesling with a laugh, and the other men laughed too. But Kristen blushed crimson, because Jamalt sat there listening to all the coarse jests that were uttered. The next day Gauta Erlandsson was betrothed to Jofrid Helgesdotter, and afterward she went to church for the first time after the birth, honored as if she had been a married woman. Sira Dag said she was entitled to this. Then she went to Sundbu with the child and remained under Sir Sigurd's protection until the wedding. It took place a month later, just after St. John's Day, and it was both beautiful and grand. The following morning, Kristen Lavran's daughter, with great ceremony, gave her keys to her son, and Gauta then fastened the ring to his wife's belt. Afterwards, Sir Sigurd Eljarn held a great banquet at Sundbu, and there he and his cousins, the former Sundbu men, solemnly swore and sealed a vow of friendship. Sir Sigurd generously presented costly gifts from his estate, both to the Yeslings and to all his guests, according to how close they were as kin or friends, drinking horns, eating vessels, jewelry, weapons, furs, and horses. People then judged that Gauta Erlandsson had brought this matter of abducting his bride to the most honorable of ends. Chapter 4. One summer morning a year later, Kristen was out on the gallery of the old hearth house, cleaning out several chests of tools that stood there. When she heard horses being led into the courtyard, She went to have a look, peering between the narrow pillars of the gallery. One of the servants was leading two horses, and Gauta had appeared in the stable doorway. The boy Erland was sitting astride his father's shoulders. The bright little face looked over the top of the man's yellow hair, and Gauta was holding the boy's tiny hands clasped in his own big tan hands under his chin. He handed the child to a maid who came across the courtyard and then mounted his horse. But when Erland screamed and reached for his father, Gauta took him back and set him in front of him on the saddle. At that moment, Jofrid came out of the main house.
"Are you taking Erland with you? Where are you headed?"
Gauta replied that he was going up to the mill. The river was threatening to carry it away. "And Erland says he wants to go with his father."
"Have you lost your wits?"
She quickly pulled the boy down, and Gauta roared with laughter.
"I think you actually believed I was going to take him along."
"Yes."
His wife laughed too.
"You're always taking the poor boy everywhere. I think you'd do the same as the lynx, eat your own young before you'd let anyone else take him."
She lifted the child's hand to wave to Gauta as he rode off from the estate. Then she put the boy down on the grass and squatted down next to him for a moment to talk to him a bit before she continued on her way over to the new storeroom and up to the loft. Kristen stood where she was, gazing at her grandson. The morning sun shone so brightly on the little child dressed in red. Young Erland twirled around in circles, staring down at the grass. Then he caught sight of a big pile of wood chips, and at once he busily began strewing them all around. Kristen laughed. He was 15 months old, but his parents thought he was ahead of his age because he could walk and run and even say two or three words. Now he was heading straight for the little stream that ran through the lower part of the courtyard and became a gurgling creek whenever it rained in the mountains. Kristen ran over and picked him up in her arms.
"You mustn't. Your mother will be cross if you get wet."
The boy drew his lips into a pout. He was probably wondering whether to cry because he wasn't allowed to splash in the stream or to give in. Getting wet was quite a big sin for him. Jofrid was much too strict with him about such matters. But he looked so clever. Laughing, Kristen kissed the boy, put him down, and went back to the gallery. But she made little headway with her work. Mostly she stood and looked out at the courtyard. The morning sun glowed so gentle and lovely above the three storerooms across from her. Kristen felt as if she hadn't taken a good look at them for a long time. How splendid the buildings were, with the pillars adorning their loft galleries and the elaborate carvings. The gilded weather vane on the crossed timbers of the gable of the new storeroom glittered against the blue haze covering the mountains in the distance. This year, after the wet spring, the grass was so fresh on the rooftops. Kristen gave a little sigh, cast another glance at little Erland, and then turned back to the chests. Suddenly, the wailing cry of a child pierced the air behind her. She threw down everything she was holding and rushed outside. Erland was shrieking as he looked back and forth from his finger to a half-dead wasp lying in the grass. When his grandmother lifted him up to soothe him, he screamed even louder. And when she, amid much crying and complaining, put some damp earth and a cold green leaf on the sting, his wailing became quite dreadful. Hushing and caressing him, Kristen carried the boy into her house, but he screamed as if he were in deadly pain, and then stopped short in the middle of a howl. He recognized the box and horn spoon that his grandmother was taking down from above the door. Kristen dipped pieces of lefse in honey and fed them to the child as she continued to soothe him, placing her cheek against his fair neck where the hair was still short and curly from the days when he lay in his cradle and rubbed his head against the pillow. And then Erland forgot all about his sorrow and turned his face up toward Kristen, offering to pat and kiss her with sticky hands and lips. As they sat there, Jofrid came into the room.
"Have you brought him indoors?" "You didn't need to do that, Mother. I was just upstairs in the loft."
Kristen mentioned what had happened to Erland outside.
"Didn't you hear him scream?"
Jofrid thanked her mother-in-law.
"But now we won't trouble you anymore."
and she picked up the child, who was now reaching out for his mother and wanted to go to her, and they left the room. Kristen put away the honey box. Then she continued to sit.